9:32. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. This has been a fun week for me. I just got back from vacation, had such a good time, and then had to go to an emergency dentist appointment. And they gave me the drug that they give people who shake. And it turns out to be a very powerful drug. I was calling in the talk show earlier this morning in my capacity as Caller X, the anonymous person, which is the only way you can say something political about an upcoming election. And notice that my voice is shaking. There's some part of me going, gee, my voice is shaking. But I couldn't do anything about it, and I was trying to play my flute, and I was like, gee, I'm completely out of tune. This is no fun at all. Because it takes a long time to come down from that drug, apparently. So, hi, this is the drugged version of Press Watch. I'll do the best I can. I think that if you have access to a computer, you should pull up blackboxvoting.org. This week, the state of Pennsylvania sequestered all Diebold touchscreen machines to implement an emergency security measure. Several more states are expected to follow Pennsylvania. The state of Utah has known that a critical security risk exists in its Diebold TSX touchscreens, but chose to punish the courageous public official responsible for identifying the defect instead of taking any efforts to learn what the problem is and how to correct it. And that's a long story. And I just want to encourage you to look it up. And now a blast from the past. News from November 8th, 2005, reported by Jim Redden in the Tribune. He wrote, another Portland company has moved out of town, largely because of the combined City of Portland Multnomah County business income tax. Integrated Concepts Incorporated, a four-person computer software firm, moved from northeast Portland to Tigard in late October. Co-owner David Lister said the tax, commonly called the BIT, was a major reason for the move. Quote, we're going to save more than $3,600 in taxes a year. That's very dramatic, especially dramatic when you realize that we're such a small business, end quote, Lister said. According to Lister, his company will pay only a $55 Tigard business license fee and no Washington County tax or fee next year. The difference is enough for three monthly payments on our new building, Lister said. Just news, you know. A little blast from the past. A little bit of news. Is it time to destroy capitalism yet? You may have heard that the president of Iran sent a letter last week to the front man for the neocon coup in the U.S., a Mr. George W. Bush. This is pretty forward for the Iranians, since despite the occasional ridiculous statement about preferring diplomacy and dealing with Iran, we don't have diplomatic relations with Iran. That's right, no ambassador and no embassy. So the Swiss passed it along. I think it was the Swiss. Now, naturally, no one wishes to know what the letter said. I mean, that's what you would presume, because no one found out until recently. But the wholly owned corporate subsidiaries in the U.S. government and the press didn't release a transcript. Fortunately, the French press did, so now at least we have a translation of a translation available. Gee, I wonder what it would be like to live in a free country where the letter would be immediately available to the People's Free Press. Sometimes I think it would be worth fighting to gain such freedom, you know? But anyway, here's a portion of a letter from Iranian President Ahmadinejad, who, by the way, is an anti-Semitic scumbag, etc., etc., and I hate his guts. But wouldn't you like to know what he wrote? Well, he wrote this, in part. Mr. George Bush, President of the United States of America, for some time now I have been thinking, how can one justify the undeniable contradictions that exist in the international arena, which are being constantly debated, especially in political forums and amongst university students? Many questions remain unanswered. These have prompted me to discuss some of the contradictions and questions in the hopes that it might bring about an opportunity to redress them. Can one be a follower of Jesus Christ, the great messenger of God, and feel obliged to respect human rights, present compassion as a civilization model, and announce one's opposition to the proliferation of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction, and yet make war and terror his slogan? This is the president of Iran's letter. Continuing. Can one work towards the establishment of a unified international community, a community which Christ and the virtuous of the earth will one day govern, but at the same time have countries attacked, the lives, reputations, and possessions of people destroyed, and all on the slight chance of criminals attacking a city? Or because of the possibility of the existence of weapons of mass destruction in one country, that country is occupied, around 100,000 people killed, its water sources, agriculture, and industry destroyed, close to 180,000 foreign troops put on the ground, sanctity of private homes of citizens broken, and the country pushed back perhaps 50 years, at what price? Hundreds of billions of dollars spent from the treasury of one country and certain other countries, and tens of thousands of young men and women as occupation troops put in harm's way, taken away from family and loved ones, their hands stained with the blood of others, subjected to so much psychological pressure that every day some commit suicide, and those returning home suffer depression, become sickly, and grapple with all sorts of ailments, while others are killed and their bodies handed to their families. I am reading from a letter to George W. Bush from the president of Iran, a Mr. Ahmadinejad. Continuing with the letter, On the pretext of the existence of weapons of mass destruction, this great tragedy came to engulf both the peoples of the occupied and the occupying country. Later it was revealed that no weapons of mass destruction existed to begin with. Of course, Saddam was a murderous dictator, but the war was not waged to topple him. The announced goal of the war was to find and destroy weapons of mass destruction. He was toppled along the way towards another goal. Nevertheless, the people of the region are happy about it. I must, however, point out that throughout the many years of the war on Iran, Saddam was supported by the West. Mr. President, you might know that I am a teacher. My students ask me, how can these actions be reconciled with the values outlined at the beginning of this letter in duty to the tradition of Jesus Christ, the messenger of peace and forgiveness? There are prisoners in Guantanamo Bay that have not been tried, have no legal representation, their families cannot see them, and are obviously kept in a strange land outside their own country. There is no international monitoring of their condition and fate. No one knows whether they are prisoners, POWs, accused, or criminals. European investigators have confirmed the existence of secret prisons in Europe, too. I could not correlate the abduction of a person and him or her being kept in secret prisons with the provisions of any judicial system. For that matter, I fail to understand how such actions correspond to the values outlined in the beginning of this letter, i.e. the teachings of Jesus Christ, human rights, and family values. This is a letter from the president of Iran, Mr. Ahmadinejad. Continuing with the letter, young people, university students, and ordinary people have many questions about the phenomenon of Israel. I'm sure you are familiar with some of them. Throughout history, many countries have been occupied, but I think the establishment of a new country with a new people is a new phenomenon that is exclusive to our times. Students are saying that 60 years ago, such a country did not exist. They show old documents and globes and say, try as we have, we have not been able to find a country named Israel. I tell them to study the history of World War I and II. One of my students told me that during World War II, during which more than tens of millions of people perished, news about the war was quickly disseminated by the warring parties. Each touted their victories in the most recent battlefront defeat of the other party. After the war, they claimed that 6 million Jews had been killed, 6 million people that were surely related to at least 2 million families. Again, let us assume that these events are true. Does that logically translate into the establishment of the State of Israel in the Middle East or the support for such a state? How can this phenomenon be rationalized or explained?
To get the best out of your employees,
from
to motivate
to
them,
President
try
George Bush,
music.
Have
your
President
team try Live 365. And because your employees are exceptional, suggest a preferred membership. They can try it free at live365.com/VIP.
People were made refugees.
You're listening to Live 365.
Olive plantations, towns, and villages were destroyed. This tragedy is not exclusive to the time of establishment. Unfortunately, it has been ongoing for 60 years now. A regime has been established which does not show mercy even to kids, destroys houses while the occupants are still in them, announces beforehand its list of plans to assassinate Palestinian figures, and keeps thousands of Palestinians in prison. Such a phenomenon is unique, at the very least extremely rare in recent memory. Another big question asked by people is, why is this regime being supported? Is support for this regime in line with the teachings of Jesus Christ or Moses or compassionate values? Or are we to understand that allowing the original inhabitants of these lands, inside and outside Palestine, whether they are Christian, Muslim, or Jew, to determine their fate, runs contrary to the principles of democracy, human rights, and teachings of prophets? If not, why is there so much opposition to a referendum? The newly elected Palestinian administration recently took office. All independent observers have confirmed that this government represents the electorate. Unbelievingly, They have put the elected government under pressure and have advised it to recognize the Israeli regime, abandon the struggle, and follow the programs of the previous government. If the current Palestinian government had run on the above platform, would the Palestinian people have voted for it? Again, can such position be taken in opposition to the Palestinian government and be reconciled with the values outlined earlier? The people are also saying, why are all UNSC resolutions in condemnation of Israel vetoed? That's from President Ahmadinejad of Iran in a letter to President Bush of the United States, which was largely kept out of the press. I suppose I should make the obligatory comment that what he says about Israel is at least insensitive. You know, I just pretty much guarantee I'll get some grief for reading that part. And, you know, he's full of it. And I'll probably agree with all the phone calls I'll get anyway. President Ahmadinejad also writes, as you are well aware, I live amongst the people and I'm in constant contact with them. Many people from around the Middle East managed to contact me as well. They do not have faith in these people's policies either. There is evidence that the people of the region are becoming increasingly angry with such policies. It is not my intention to pose too many questions, but I need to refer to other points as well. Why is it that any technological and scientific achievement reached in the Middle East regions is translated into and portrayed as a threat to the Zionist regimes? Is not scientific research and development one of the basic rights of nations? You are familiar with history, aside from the Middle Ages, and what other point in history has scientific and technical progress been a crime? Can the possibility of scientific achievements being utilized for military purposes be reasonable enough to oppose science and technology altogether? If such a supposition is true, then all scientific disciplines, including physics, chemistry, mathematics, medicine, engineering, etc., must be opposed. Lies were told in the American matter. What was the result? I have no doubt that telling lies is reprehensible in any culture, and that you do not like to be lied to. Stop there for a second and talk about what he said about Israel. Also comes in the context of some really ridiculous things that he says about Israel. And last I checked, I believe he was also supporting the Chronicles of Elders of Zion and other such standards. So, whereas many things that he said were true, the context, don't you? Of course, context is specific. Israel should be wiped off the map. But I think he's making some good points here, isn't he? And why is it, if this is supposed to be a democracy here in the United States, wait while you stop laughing, why is it this letter was kept from the people? And why do I have to report it on a tiny little radio station reaching maybe 60,000 people to return to oblivion to be ignored? I wonder what it would be like to have it. Anyway, returning to the letter from President Ahmadinejad, don't Latin Americans have a right to ask why their elected governments are being opposed and being either supported? Or why must they be constantly threatened? Or why must they live in fear? The people of Africa are hardworking, creative, and talented. They can play an important and valuable role in providing for the needs of humanity and contribute to its material and spiritual progress. Poverty and hardship in large parts of Africa are prevented from this happening. Are preventing this from happening. Don't they have the right to ask why their enormous wealth, including minerals, is being looted despite the fact that they need it more than others? Again, do such actions correspond to the teachings of Christ and the tenets of human rights? The brave and faithful people of Iran, too, have many questions and grievances, including the coup d'etat of 53 and the subsequent toppling of the legal government of the day. He's referring to the CIA's coup. To the letter, opposition to the Islamic Revolution, transformation of an embassy into headquarters supporting the activities of those opposing the Islamic Republic, and thousands of pages of documents corroborate this claim. Support for Saddam and the war waged against Iran, the shooting down of the Iranian passenger plane, freezing the assets of the Iranian nation, increasing threats, anger, and displeasure vis-a-vis the scientific and nuclear progress of the Iranian nation, just when all Iranians are jubilant and collaborating their country's progress, and many other grievances I will not refer to in this letter. Mr. President, September 11th was a horrendous incident. The killing of innocents is deplorable and appalling in any part of the world. Our government immediately declared its disgust with the perpetrators and offered its condolences to the bereaved and expressed its sympathies. All governments have a duty to protect the lives, property, and good standing of their citizens. Reportedly, your government employs extensive security, protection, and intelligence systems and even hunts its opponents abroad. September 11th was not a simple operation. Could it be planned and executed without coordination with intelligence and security services or their extensive infiltration? Of course, this is just an educated guess. Why have the various aspects of the attacks been kept secret? Why are we not told who botched their responsibility? Why aren't we responsible for the business parties identified as
well? Change, a sky change. I feel that it's almost there.
Continuing. All governments have a duty to provide security and peace of mind for their citizens. For some years now, the people of your country and neighbors of the world trouble spots do not have peace of mind. After 9-1-1, instead of healing and tending to the emotional wounds of the survivors and the American people who had been immensely traumatized by the attacks, some Western media only intensified the climates of fear and insecurity. Some constantly talked about the possibility of new terror attacks and kept the people in fear. Is that service to the American people? Is it possible to calculate the damages incurred from fear and panic? There's much more to the letter. I think I'll have
Ask
done with
me,
it.
How do I
the time
feel?
Is 9:48. Interesting thing about the letter from President Ahmadinejad is that he chastises Bush towards the end of the letter on a religious basis, and not purely on a Muslim basis, but rather he makes a chauvinistic appeal to monotheistic religions. And I don't even want to start with that, but it's a very interesting letter. I found it on commondreams.org. No, I didn't. I found it on Raw Story, as translated from the French, as translated from the Persian, as presented by Le Monde, and as not previously available in the United States. I mean, it's been around for more than a week. But now you can find out what the president of Iran has to say. Now, to change subjects entirely, it's 9:49. You're listening to KBOO. You know, we could say the KBOO radio network because we have translator stations and we have KBOO.FM worldwide. We'll talk about geothermal power. And the reason I want to talk about it is, I was spurred to when the coup leader, Mr. Bush, well, he's not really the leader, the coup facade, Mr. Bush, made a ridiculously transparent feint towards doing something about gasoline supply. He allowed the refineries to pollute more. Aren't you glad he didn't
pamper
buy that?
Yourself with
he
a preferred membership. Enjoy music without interruption. Exhilarate in CD quality sound. Ensure your unlimited access to twice as many Live 365 stations. Try preferred request. Membership free. Sign up at live365.com/VIP.
From, you know,
Live 365.
To the American consumer of gasoline. But I want to talk about geothermal power in that context. The amount of heat within 33,000 feet of the surface of the Earth contains 50,000 times more energy than all the oil and natural gas resources in the world. From government websites, it's from Union of Concerned Scientists website, UCUSA. They use government stats. The areas with the highest underground temperatures are in regions with active or geologically young volcanoes. These hot spots occur at plate boundaries or at places where the crust is thin enough to let the heat through. The Pacific Rim, called the Ring of Fire for all its volcanoes, has many hot spots, including some in Alaska, California, and Oregon. Nevada has hundreds of hot spots, covering most of the northern part of the state. These regions are also seismically active. The many earthquakes and the movement of the magma break up the rock covering, allowing water to circulate. As the water rises to the surface, natural hot springs and geysers occur, such as Old Faithful at Yellowstone National Park. Water in these systems can be more than 200 degrees centigrade, that's 430 degrees Fahrenheit. The most common current way of capturing the energy from geothermal sources is to tap into naturally occurring hydrothermal convection systems. When heated water is forced to the surface, it is a relatively simple matter to capture that steam and use it to drive electric generators. Geothermal power plants drill their own holes into the rock to more effectively capture the steam. This is being done nearby, actually, just 40 miles east-southeast of Salem at Brighton Bush Hot Springs, where the entire resort is powered by steam blasting up out of the ground. There are three designs for geothermal power plants. This information is a little old, actually, but anyway. All of which pull hot water and steam from the ground, use it, and return it as warm water to prolong the life of the heat source. In the simplest design, the steam goes directly through the turbine, then into a condenser where the low-temperature steam is condensed into water. In a second approach, the steam and hot water are separated as they come out of the well. The steam is used to drive the turbine while the water is sent directly back underground. In a third approach, called a binary system, the hot water and steam mixture is passed through a heat exchanger where it heats a second liquid, like isobutane, or I just found out this morning, CO2, in a closed loop. The isobutane boils at lower temperatures than water, so as steam it is used to drive the turbine. The choice of which design to use is determined by the resource. If the water comes out of the well as steam, it can be used directly, as in the first design. If it is hot water, it must go through a heat exchanger. Since there are more hot water resources than pure steam, there's more growth potential in the heat exchanger design. Now, the reason I bring all this up, of course, is that we're next to the Cascades, and we have geothermal sources. Well, actually, there's a hot spot right in the city of Portland. There are several more on Mount Hood. Of course, there's Mount St. Helens. And I would like to suggest publicly, and within the context of a community organization, that that we should build our own geothermal system. And I mean a system built by the city of Portland and whoever else, whatever governments want to join, a system exclusive of such parasites as CH2M Hill, for example. A system for us and by us because, as Breitenbusch has shown, it can easily be done. And it's not free energy, but my gosh, it's cheap energy. And at this point, Iceland, which uses a great deal of steam energy and which drills as far as 13,000 feet, is saying that they can become the Kuwait of the North because of their geothermal power. And why shouldn't that be done? Here in the Northwest, we used to be a huge source of cheap power until Cheney had his secret energy meetings and all the shuffling and theft and secret dealings happened so that now we can't get easy, cheap power out of the dams. And there are other problems with the dams, especially if you're a salmon. But I've been informed that I have a call. I haven't given out the number. Someone just memorized it, which is okay by me, I guess, and I'll just go ahead and take a call. Oh, they took off. They're gone. Okay. Never mind. Anyway, the largest geothermal system now in operation is a steam-driven plant in an area called the Geysers north of San Francisco. Despite the name, there's actually no geysers, and the heat that is used for energy is all steam and not hot water. Although the area was known for its hot springs as far back as the mid-1800s, the first well for power production was drilled in 1924. Deeper wells were drilled in the 1950s, but real development didn't occur until the 70s and 80s. By 1990, 26 power plants had been built for a capacity of over 2,000 megawatts. I think you say 2 gigawatts. In 1992, the area produced enough power for a city of 1.3 million. Now, I want to bring this down to the local level. The sixth meeting of the Geothermal Working Group will be May 17th, 2006. It's going to be in Oregon somewhere. And I challenge you to look up Geothermal Working Group, OGWG, on the web if you're interested and find out where the meeting is. The USGS reports that thermal activity at Mount Hood is in fumarole fields near Crater Rock at the apex of a semicircular zone of fumaroles and hydrothermally altered heated ground. In summer of 87, maximum ground temperatures were near 85 degrees centigrade and maximum fumarole temperatures were around 92 degrees centigrade, slightly above the boiling point of water at 3,100 meters. So it's near the summit at 9,000, 10,000 feet. But that's just an example of how close geothermal power is to Portland right now. And as I mentioned, there's a hot spot just south of the Columbia River in Portland. It's the same spot you can find it on the map of local earthquakes. Look up local earthquakes for area 123-45 and you will see an area in North Portland that constantly gets 1 and 2 point earthquakes, or did last year anyway. That's the hot spot. But to suggest geothermal power in the context of the city, as corrupt as it is currently, is almost a mistake. And so I want to suggest it with a caveat, and the caveat is Dan Saltzman. If you pull up CH2M Hill and geothermal, you will get 15,000 results. If you pull up Saltzman and CH2M Hill on Google, you'll get 362 results. If you pull up Dan Saltzman, CH2M Hill, you'll get 258 results. It's just news, just the facts. Wednesday, 9:30 a.m., January 26, 2000, there was a Portland City Council agenda published, 9:30 a.m. It was a consent agenda. There was no discussion available. Item 116 was agreement with CH2M Hill to provide hydrogeologic and computer modeling services for the Columbia South Shore well field at cost not to exceed $100,000. This from the 8th of December, 03, in the Portland Tribune. After months of growing public criticism, City Commissioner Dan Saltzman says he will appoint a citizen panel to review the City Council's controversial decision to replace the open reservoirs in Mount Tabor and Washington Parks with underground storage tanks. Remember that? Remember how hard people had to fight to keep that from happening? Remember how much it cost anyway when the reservoir covers were bought? And then there was an attempt to sell them at a huge discount on eBay. That panel did exist, and surprise, it recommended that the reservoirs be covered. That's because it was loaded with CH2M Hill employees. Remember, I just said that Dan Saltzman would appoint a citizen panel. Independent, he said. So my conclusion is that Mr. Saltzman and CH2M Hill would love to horn into any bid to produce geothermal power here in Portland. So, and that's the whole point of the second half of my show today is, I think geothermal power is a timely thing. We need to have it right now, and we need to be damn certain to cut out Dan Saltzman and CH2M Hill while we're doing it. And I'm going to return to the subject very soon. I just got an interview with a fellow who knows a lot about Iceland's geothermal power, and so I'll talk about that next week. And as you can guess, I've run out of power, so thank you for I've run out of time. So thank you for tuning in to the post-dental drug version of Press Watch. And stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine on KBOO.
This is the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, May 11th. Coming up next, Per Fager interviews former KBOO programmer Paul Roland about Italy's current political situation. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie Bernard speaks with Gavin Shetler of Portland Art Center. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, faculty members at Georgetown University protest the visiting professor appointment of Douglas Feith, former Undersecretary of Defense and a chief architect of the invasion of Iraq. Now, stay tuned for Per Fager and Paul Roland. Hold on.